This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. On the job site, did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine. Our guest, Fiona, is who?
Toby Halligan, commentator, political commentator, comedian, broadcaster.
And can you describe what he's wearing?
So, Toby today is sporting what he has classified as a safari suit, although I might beg to differ in that area. In the fact, but it is a suit. It's a two-piece.
That's shocking.
It's a short-sleeve shirt and a pair of shorts. I think it's charming.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
That's right. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. No to the haters.
I'm going to speak up for Toby here. You are looking diamond.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I just think you're rocking it. And the socks you got on there, shocking
blue.
The kind of approval I'm desperate for.
Fluorescent blue and
fresh
yellow.
Fresh from NGV.
Tony,
absolutely,
you're looking gorgeous, my darling.
Thank you. I dressed for radio. What can I say? I committed to a look and I'm rocking it. I'm so happy. So please.
Yeah, I definitely
I'm
love
speechless.
It too. For those listeners, if you get onto our socials, we'll soon post a photo.
It'll be outstanding. It'll make your day. It'll be the highlight of your week.
And in actual fact, also brightening up this extremely dull day we have
That's
outside.
Exactly.
Well, that is true. That is true.
Come on,
that
I'm breaking
true.
With the Melbourne
Well,
black.
We have done something in common. We've both dressed for summer.
Yes.
It's actually miserable and cold outside.
Totally,
I can't
absolutely.
Believe we're both in shorts.
Yeah, absolutely. But with my optimistic demeanour, like I feel like I'm going to create my own climate. Like we're talking about climate change a lot. I'm going to have my own little microclimate around me, largely people gawking at this amazing
You've
safari
got foliage
suit.
And birds all over your safari
It does have to say, we need to stop talking about Toby's chest, but one last thing is that because you've got such a hairy chest, it looks like the foliage.
It looks like they're in a forest.
The birds on your shirt looks like they're coming out of a nest.
They're emerging from bracken. Yeah, absolutely. Native as well. It's native forest, obviously.
Now stop it. You'll get the bears sort of all excited.
There's been quite a lot going on. I don't know, what was your... So this happened last week, but the ramifications, I mean, it's posed really fundamental questions for a lot of people.
What?
I'm talking, of course, about the paint bombing of Hosier Lane, beloved, internationally famous street art lane, beloved by Instagrammers and people who are getting their wedding photos taken. Can I say, apparently that's a really big thing. Why are you getting your wedding photos taken in a lane with a lot of street art?
I definitely have to tell you something really strange. Many years ago, I used to be a wedding photographer.
Yeah, right.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, I know.
And Hosier Lane?
Fiona.
But that was when Hosier Lane was just in its infancy.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Just when there were a few, like it was a destiner. We would take people there because it was cool and gritty and urban.
Wow.
So, yes.
No, I like that though, right? But I just think it's great with, you know, say Nana and Papa looking at your wedding photos and like, oh, there's the lovely couple with a giant Pac-Man behind them. Or, you know what I mean? Like something like that. There's a lot of quite idiosyncratic art there. Yeah. It's great. I really like Hosier Lane.
Well, but there would be certainly ones that you would choose more than others, and you know what would be considered tasteful, and of course some of it's good, some of it's terrible, and then some of it gets painted over.
Well, this is what happens.
So what do you think about the bombing?
Right, so like on Saturday, these 10 guys come along with these fire extinguishers. I think it's great, and I think it's completely within the spirit of the lane. Yeah, like street art and graffiti. I'm a big fan of street art and graffiti. I like going around and taking pictures of it. Like I love touring kind of, you know, European cities, American cities, and checking it out. It gives you a really interesting sense of
so Street art versus street tagging?
Well, yes. I mean, so people make those kinds of distinctions. I think that distinction's often corporate, though. So street art, and this is I've been speaking to like art critics about this stuff because I'm writing a piece for the Star Observer on it. Street art is traditionally often seen as more corporatized. It's the kind of thing that, say, a company like Culture Kings, which has a store in Hosier Lane, or Melbourne City Council approves, whereas graffiti is organic. It's the kind of stuff where you don't get approval for. Like, if you're a graph artist, you're not getting anyone to sign up for what you're doing.
And so there is, it can be very ugly. A wall just off Ackland Street in St Kilda that I assume somebody commissions a bunch of street artists to paint a mural.
Yeah.
And this changes periodically. And when you look at it very carefully, it's actually advertising something.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
And so that's commercial street art.
Yes.
I think that's quite interesting. It's much more interesting than the usual generic stuff that you get plastered on walls.
Yep.
So there's that. Then you've got the sort of organic street art where you've got creative young things that just turn up and paint stuff on walls, like often happens on Hosier Lane.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Then you get the stuff that people actually often looks like vandalism, really.
Tagging, where people just come
and sort of write things on your fence or spray paint the side of your letterbox.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, and obviously, I mean, if people are doing that to your letterbox, that's not an ideal experience, you know. I mean, traditionally as well, I think people used to put fireworks in letterboxes, dog poo and things like that. So
this happens right along my street, actually.
Oh, really?
Every single day you wake up and there's more tagging.
That is annoying, right?
So to be clear, that's vandalism. When tagging.
That's how I see that.
Yeah.
Oh no, to be clear, like on this line, like some of this is, well, it's not tongue in cheek. Like I mean it. Like I think there is an interesting line, and in a designated zone, right, where the council has said, people come and paint street art. Let's celebrate it. Let's draw tourists to the area. I think there is a line between, you know, what you sign off on and murals that are officially approved and people who organically are creating art in that space. And so this paint bombing incident...
Well, it's actually like... it's like performance art,
that's
really,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but I think...
So these performance artists turn up and just poured paint all over the walls.
Yeah, and I think that is part of the spirit of Hosier Lane. Now, to be clear, if it was to happen every week or every day, or if they were just to draw terrible tags or whatever, like I agree, there's lines in the sand, there's tedium. But I think when it comes to art, and I kind of look at this as a stand-up comedian, because often the kind of speech that stand-up comedians engage in, often stand-ups go too far, yeah? Mm-hmm. Often stand-ups tell jokes people don't like or that they don't get. It's not for every audience member. And I don't think, like, to bring it back to the lane, people should be charged with a crime in a space where local council and authorities have specifically said, come and paint the area.
Right.
And then they paint it in a way that people don't like.
So why did the mayor go hard on it?
Well, I think partly this actually highlights the way in which that art has been corporatized, and there is, with all due respect to the mayor, there's this conflict, right? Because organizations like the City of Melbourne want to celebrate art. They want to say, look, it's colorful, it's edgy. I'm kind of quoting Richard Watts here, who's an arts critic who you may know and who I was talking to about this, and I think his take was quite good. You know, there is this conflict between big institutions that want to celebrate the organic nature of street art and graffiti, who then, when people actually engage in art, in acts of art, are like, oh no, not like that. We don't want art like that. No, the form of art you're doing, no. Like, they put paint in fire extinguishers. That's kind of awesome. If I filmed it in slow-mo on YouTube, it'd be totes going viral.
Well, they did. Well, I mean, it was filmed.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
They definitely made the intention for it to be sane and for the action to be sane and to, I mean, you know, it's supposedly a protest. I mean, I do believe also that the City of Melbourne and Visit Victoria and our other corporate industries use the lane and other lanes like it to promote and publicise, but none of the artists that actually partake are ever paid for that work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a free canvas for people to express on, and while you might not like what's being done, that's part and parcel of the arrangement. You can't sort of have both.
Yeah.
Has anybody spoken with the photo bombing artists?
People have.
And what's their line?
They're basically, they've said that they think that art's being really commodified. They think that there's a real a fundamental problem. In particular, they mentioned Culture Kings. So Culture Kings has commissioned murals there.
I just thought that when Culture Kings opened up and put a back door, an entrance on Hosier Lane,
Yeah, like I mean, kind of agree with them.
Is that fair?
Yeah, like I think if you want to sell shirts off the back, then like I think it's a bit rich when Culture Kings comes out and complains about people painting over the murals they've commissioned on the land that they've paid for. Like you've put it in a space where specifically that's why you've come there. You know, like there's just I think a bit of hypocrisy going on.
Well, I was involved in an. Through my work, I was involved in commissioning a piece of street art on a laneway in Melbourne that was in line with the values of the restaurant that was nearby. So we were...
You're part of the problem, Fiona.
No. All I can say is I was involved because this is what the...
This is what the client wanted.
This is what the client wanted.
And they were paying for it.
And they were happy to pay for it.
They wanted pretty art.
And we struck an arrangement with the City of Melbourne and with another organisation to cover the cost of the painting and the preparing of the wall. And there was something there which I thought was quite unattractive previously, but, you know, I'm not saying I'm the, you know, the judge of what is good. Anyway, so they went to great effort to have this wall, this work done. It was a bit generic, I thought. However, several months later, it was repainted over by the same people that had the first painting underneath.
Uh-huh. Now, if you've just tuned in, you're wondering what we're talking about. We're talking about the photobombing incident on Hosier Lane with our guest this morning, Toby Hemming.
Halligan Hemming
is somebody else, actually.
I don't mind that. It depends on how it goes. One of my first stand-up gigs in Melbourne, I was doing the gig didn't go very well, and I got introduced as Tony Harrigan, and I bombed a bit.
Who's Tony Harrigan?
And then as I walked off, yes, exactly. I said, I've been Tony Harrigan. Thanks, guys. And I walked out of the room. Yep.
Let us know what you think. So shoot us a text or shoot us an email on air at joy.org.au. or 0427569949. Paul, you're about to say something.
Yeah, we were talking about the photobombing of the Hosier Lane graffiti down there. And I'm pretty much on the same page as you, I think, Toby, is that the whole point of that lane is to change and evolve. And if one artist comes in and paints over another artist's work, that's acceptable. The fact that someone's come in and painted over someone else's work just with a plain piece of painting without anything going on it. It's the same thing. And it's about growth and journey. And I agree with the protest. It shouldn't be commercialised. Let's just wipe the blackboard clean again and start all over one more time.
Mm. Yeah, I think, and like to kind of round out like the comments that I think were being made by the folks who engaged in the paint bombing, a lot of it is also a protest against gentrification and the sense that you are losing the authentic connection between the artists and what people are actually seeing on walls. And that there's a long history of that. Like most of the art we have now was bought and paid for by patrons, you know? And I quite like those little acts of rebellion. Like if you go to the Sistine Chapel, for example, so Michelangelo, when he was painting it, he didn't want anyone to come in and see it before he was finished. But a Vatican official snuck in for a look, and so that Vatican official got added into one of the damned amongst in the devil mural.
Oh, that's a great story.
You know what I mean? So I like that's artists nice. Pushing back. I think that should be celebrated. You know, people get to have their views on it, but I think when the cops are involved, you know, you've got to be, come on, let's be reasonable.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Fiona, Paul and Tass, and our guest this morning is Toby Halligan. I got that right this time.
You sure did.
Toby, we want to change subjects. Let's talk about sports rorts. What are your latest reflections on what's going on with that little saga?
So on Thursday, there was what may potentially be a smoking gun on the sports rorts saga. So obviously $100 million was spent overall. Bridget McKenzie has resigned, but there are a range of questions about whether other people within the government were aware of how this scheme is being administered, in particular whether Scott Morrison and members of his office were directly involved in helping administer it. What happened on Thursday was that someone from the Australian National Audit Office, this is the organisation that originally issued the report that basically kicked off this scandal, was being interviewed in a Senate Select Committee, and Eric Abetz, who everybody loves, was asking him questions. And clearly Abetz thought it was a Dorothy Dixon. He was really nailing this. He was like, he basically, just to cheeky aside, was like, so all of them were found to be eligible. That's correct, yes. And the head of the audit office said no, 42% of them were ineligible. And that contradicts in a really fundamental way the Prime Minister's and the whole government's entire argument about the sports rorts scandal. And technically it means Scott Morrison's misled the Parliament 18 times, basically the argument has been however it was worked out internally, that everything was eligible. And so the premise of the argument obviously being that, oh, look, sure, exactly who got what, you know, questions, but they were all fine. Everything was green-lit, if you like. And this, you know, basically suggests that actually, overwhelmingly, the clubs that were receiving money, 43% of them, didn't need it or didn't deserve it.
So what does this mean? What does this really mean, Toby? Well, I mean, my sense of this is that we've got a bit of Teflon happening here. Nothing is sticking. Everybody seems to be getting away with it.
I think a minister
lost their job on something that was really quite minor. It was not about the rorts. It was about a minor issue at the end of the day. Mm. What does this really mean?
Well, I think there'll be a couple of things. Firstly, I think you're right that there is this sense of Teflon, but that's because the Prime Minister is directly implicated. Mm. He's got to be really careful about, like, he can't let members of his staff go because they will probably have been acting on his instructions here. That's a classic media trick that's now utilised by politicians who are under pressure. Staff members get pinged with, oh, well, so-and-so, I was never hurt, they never told me, as if these kinds of offices aren't run with incredible levels of centralised control. Like, senior staff are always aware of most things.
Yeah, but come on, what does it really mean? I mean, what difference is this going to make?
What can Labor do about it? Can anybody do anything about this?
Well, what I think will happen is there will be now an incentive for journalists to investigate every one of the individual clubs that didn't get deserving money, FOI those applications. And because you've got so much information and because Sports Australia is a statutory body, I reckon there's a decent chance you'll find that people may have breached other rules and other laws. So I think you'll have a rolling scandal that makes Scott Morrison kind of look pretty dodgy. Now, whether he'll resign, probably not, right? But I think it means they start the parliamentary year, firstly, with Morrison acting with compromised authority, but also just with a really basic whiff of things not being quite right around the government. Like, things, obviously, the bushfire crisis, the government didn't handle that very well. I think most people agree. They're potentially going in for some really contentious legislation around...
Paul, what do you think?
I have to ask the question about where is the civil servants in this process, because the government have ministers that come and go, but you've got a core body of people there who actually run the engine of government and must make sure that
they're the ones that have actually told the truth in policy. This instance,
well,
purportedly.
So my question being is that why was there not the outlet or the voice to come and do that ahead of the announcements being made, before the grants were actually given, and say, look, guys, these aren't the rules. You haven't followed them. You need to go back to the drawing board. The grants will not be granted and the money will not be given. And I think, where is the teeth for those people that who are probably have the honesty and the integrity to actually enact the policy? They may not agree with the policy,
sure,
but they're there to deliver it.
That did happen. Sports Australia did say to Bridget McKenzie's office, we think this process is being politicised and that's a big problem, and they were ignored. So because they're a statutory body, they basically, Sports Australia, were allowed to give advice to the minister. The minister's required to act on that advice. But over the last 30 years in Australia and around the Western world, I won't go into too much detail here because it's dense, basically power has been transferred from public service departments into ministers' offices. So ministers' offices now have much more power. They're subject to much less scrutiny. Ministers are able to hide how and why they've made decisions. Departments are still involved in lots of things, but this scandal is an example, firstly, of that overall trend, but why it's a problem. Because the problem with politicians being really directly involved with allocating money like this, they think, oh, it's good, we can allocate money out to our mates or do people favours. This is the cynical view. Lots of politicians are really honest and aren't like this, right? But those who are a bit dodgy do this kind of stuff. The price of that is sometimes you have a scandal like this and you get caught up in, basically, it's a patronage. You know, it's a circle of patronage here.
It's shocking, absolutely shocking in this day and age that they've managed to get away with the process that is fundamentally flawed.
Well, I mean, it just does, of course, make you think about, well, what else do we not know about? What other situations, what other rorts have been going? Well, we know that they go on. Mm-hmm. But I think that when you tie sport in, it becomes really emotive because we know how people love their sports in Australia and would do anything, and that, you know, no one wants to deny sporting clubs. You know, they get funding. You know, know, which is good, but there are areas which could have been receiving money. And there was the story that came out later this week about how there was a spare $100,000 or $100,000 that Bridget McKenzie gave to another club, or gave to a sporting club for it to do a study, which is funds that should have gone to disability.
So, Toby, will this damage the government?
I think there'll be pressure on them to introduce a National Integrity Commission, and it will be very hard for them to block that now. There was a vote on that last week that went down by 2 votes. I reckon it would be very surprising if someone like Jackie Lambie or someone else, in order to get other legislation passed, didn't make that a condition.
We've had a bit of feedback from some of our listeners. Of course, good morning to the lovely Melina Smith. Always lovely to hear from you, Melina, and keep on your advocacy with the media. Melina's been writing to the local papers with some of her views about things, which is always great, and she loves to share them with us, which is always really good to hear. But we've had a message here from 855 who says that essentially they believe that the PM knew what was going on all along. Do you support that contention?
I think it would be surprising if he were unaware of the scheme and how it was being administered, given he was present at a soccer club.
And there's now evidence of communication between his office and McKenzie's office.
Well, a lot of that evidence, and certainly members of his staff were involved in changing suggestions around different electorates that were deserving of money. But Scott Morrison, a soccer club in his electorate, received money before it had been announced. He went and announced it before it had been announced. So, you know what I mean?
Like, what do you mean? He announced it before it was announced?
Yeah, before it was official. As in he...
Before it had been signed off,
because there were all these processes around. And at this date, everyone will officially find out about it. And the PM just went a week early and was like, hey! And there's a picture of him holding up a soccer shirt and things
but
like that.
But really, is that a crime?
No, it's not
a crime.
I
mean, he is the PM.
Sure, it's not a crime, but what it goes to is fairness and process. You know, like if you're going to tell everyone, hey, we're going to divvy up some money for deserving clubs, put some effort in, apply this way, like hundreds of clubs around the country do this. Why is there one set of rules for one set of clubs and another set of rules that apply to everyone
else? So I'm going to go back to my original question to you. Mm. So what?
I think.
What does this mean?
I think there will be pressure for a National Integrity Commission. I also think it will, that they've lost momentum maybe on religious discrimination and a couple of other bills. Like, it's funny how this stuff builds up, you know, like the sense of the Prime Minister losing gravitas. He had a lot of authority. Like, if we were talking about this in September last year, like, the idea, I think we would have all assumed the Religious Freedom Bill would have passed, given the amount of authority Scott Morrison was exhibiting. He wasn't being challenged by the media.
No, see, I've got a view about that. Mm. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
The bill?
I think the bill is designed to distract and to deviate from other issues. Whenever it gets hot, we will see this come to the surface again. We will see another variation or an amendment.
That's an interesting take on it, Tass.
This has now been dragging on for far too long. It's actually spanned now a second government. And it is too contentious. Even the party itself, the Liberal Party itself, is split on this. We had Concetta Ferravati-Vells the other day coming out and saying, no, this is too faulty, we can't support this. Let's throw it away and start again and do it properly. Now, what does that mean? I don't know what it means from her point of view, but I actually don't think that is ever going to see the light of day. But I think that the AG and the PM will stoke the flames as required to shift the focus away from something like issues around integrity.
Yeah, that's an interesting
tactic.
Analysis.
It's a political tactic.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the problem they'll bump into is it's now so contentious, the Religious Freedom Bill. Mm. You've had doctors coming out against it, big business, just such a huge range of organisations.
No, the churches are split, the health services are split, everybody's split on this.
Yeah.
And the last thing we want is to try to find some sort of middle ground in a very, very contentious, a very, very messy environment and space because, you know, nobody really supports it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think Israel Folau going to France and also the settlement between Rugby Australia and Folau has removed whatever... He was the personification of the issue, to a lot of people, not a charismatic one. To many people, he is a charismatic figure. He's gone now. He's gone to France.
Although I don't think he's necessarily going to be out of the press because I do think he's being pursued In terms of the legal action that potentially could take place. So there is something rumbling on the background that makes service later on as a story. We'll just have to see how that pans out.
I'm not sure that that's a story anymore. Mm. I think that one's sort of lost its momentum, to be quite honest. Mm. But I do think the rorts will continue to haunt the government for a while.
They will.
I think you're right about that. Mm. I think that this has now become so complicated, so convoluted, and there are so many interesting sides to it. You know, when you hear about, you know, Mosman Rowing Club getting $500,000 to, you know, put more icing on the cake, and then you hear of neighbouring little sports clubs who, you know, just have are really struggling. There's a real inequity issue here, and people get that.
Now, a quick turnaround of events. Toby, we were talking about a preview of SatMag earlier, and one of the things we were just discussing is you have a very insightful view about what is going on behind the scenes, and we just wanted to know, someone in your position, political...
I think what you mean is it's not so much insightful, it's about you're early on the take. You seem to know what's going on much earlier
than the rest of us. It does sound a bit dubious, doesn't it? Early on the take.
Isn't that what you're saying?
It is, yes. Yeah, so yeah. We just wanted to how do you get your sources?
How do you get your finger on the pulse? Where does it come from?
Oh, firstly, honestly, I think social media, if you follow the
right kinds of journalists, you're glued to social media.
That is part of it. Like, that's often where stories and segments of stories break. I follow particular journalists who tend to be 2 to 3 days ahead of the mainstream cycle. But honestly, often it is just that, because I've been writing about politics for 20 years now, because I was really cool at school. I was following it even when I was at school. You see how cyclical this stuff is, the patterns.
Mm. Well, did you start writing it when you were 5 or something?
Well, honestly, I was following when I was 15.
He's still in short trousers.
I joined a political party when I was 16.
Are you 35?
Yeah, I know. Do I look younger or older?
I know what you want me to say.
and you get a bit used to the rhythms of things, and you just begin. So sometimes you get inside tips about things that may have gone on or other stuff that's happened. But these scandals, they were always kind of samey. It turns out, oh yeah, and of course they did this again, and they did this again. You know, because the people who put themselves in these kinds of positions often, like, have similar traits. There's a degree of incompetence or a laziness about how this stuff gets handled. The sports fraud scandal should never have been... There should have been an adult in the room, and someone should have said, how does this look to an ordinary person?
Does that bode well, then, for the next set of scandals, if Scott Morrison is so heavily implicated, as the latest information would suggest? Does that mean there's a whole bunch more stuff that we don't know about that we're about to find out about?
I think so. Well, I think that the... Have you ever heard... How long do we have? A very quick little story.
Yeah, a couple of minutes. Yeah. You're good.
Van Halen.
Keep
big,
it brave.
Big 80s rock band, yeah, right? Huge. Van Halen.
I know who they are,
were big,
Toby.
Right? Yep. 80s and 90s, they were beginning to tour the Midwest in the United States, right? And they were going to a lot of venues where big bands had never played. And so they had this 200-page contract with all these technical specifications. There'd be these fireworks on stage. They had at the back of it, they had this writer, this long list of stuff the band wanted in the rooms, right? And they had in it, they said, there's going to be a bowl of M&Ms in the change rooms, in the room where the band hangs out, and there should be no brown M&Ms. And the tour manager, when he'd arrive at a venue, would go straight into the green room, go straight to the bowl, and if he saw a brown M&M, he knew they haven't read all the detail of the contract. There could be other stuff that's gone wrong that they haven't handled that isn't as obvious. You know, the fireworks could accidentally explode. The electricity could be wired properly, and they might cancel gigs, or he'd begin to lose his stuff. I think with governments, there is always more stuff going on behind the scenes. The fact that right now there are so many brown M&Ms, like these scandals, there'll be other bigger stuff that's happening that will come out later. And so the fact that it's all happening so quickly is a sign.
But isn't the real story here that what we're finally seeing is a level of corruption, a level of dishonesty that actually is quite embedded in the way in which this government is operating? That's a really big accusation to make.
I understand.
But that's what's emerging, and that's what this is. This is now providing evidence and fueling those arguments.
Yeah, I think what happened was they didn't expect to win the last election, and so they were desperate, and so they didn't make principled decisions. They weren't thinking about how will this look in a year. They were thinking, how the hell are we going to win in May? Oh, we're desperate, you know? Mm. And that desperation drove some expedient decision-making. But I also think what happens too, and this happened with Rudd Gillard, things like that, this happens with every government. 5-6 years in, people move on. The best people move on. The best people who got the good gigs, who led you into government, move on. The people who don't have other options stick around.
So just to wrap this chat up, what's your prediction? Where's this going to land?
My prediction
is... 6 months' time, where do you think we'll be?
I think we will be seriously talking, or we'll have the framework for a national integrity body that will potentially operate at a federal level. That will be Scott Morrison's distraction. There may well be another review of some kind, which is ridiculous. We've already had multiple reviews. I think he may well lose a couple of staff members as well. I reckon he will ping it back to a couple of people in his office, because that's something that a lot of journalists have been beginning to call for and offering more scrutiny of, like political staff as well.
Well, you heard it here first. Toby is predicting that the PM's going to lose a few staff. In other words, they'll be scapegoated out.
Uh-huh.
And you're also saying that there will be an increased interest and call for a National Integrity Commission.
Another prediction? Safari suits are in this season.
I don't think so. So we'll get you back in 6 months' time to actually review that, because I think that'll be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to make a note in our calendars to remember to...
Toby will be back before...
I know he will.
You must come back in a different suit.
Yeah, don't
going to go shopping.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.